Welcome everybody. This is an Insurance Institute of Manchester webinar on multi-occupancy premises, the impact of the FCA review. We're delighted to welcome John Batty, Technical Director at Bridge Insurance Brokers Limited. He's also on the BEBA main board as a director, and he is chair of the BEBA Regional Chairs Advisory Board. John is going to take us through the new rules on multiple occupancy insurance, which comes into force on the 1st of January 2024 and will impact in excess of 5 million leaseholders. By the end of this webinar, we will be able to describe the FCA policy statement on residential multi-occupancy buildings, the new rules on multi-occupancy insurances and the ramifications of this to insurers and brokers, and the fair value assessment framework. So John, welcome, and over to you, please.
Good afternoon, everyone. I hope everyone can hear me.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to take you through some slides I've got to share with everybody. I've been representing both Bridge and BEBA at board level with the FCA, and BELOC in a lot of the discussions that have been centred around multi-occupancy buildings insurance, or MOBI, as we like to call it. Let's get into it. So I've got a slight agenda. I'm going to give you a little bit of background into MOBI. I'm going to talk to you about the FCA's thematic reviews, and then the final new rules, and then actions brokers and insurers should take. So let's do a little bit of the background into MOBI. Post-Grenfell, the building fabric of the UK was under the spotlight, and it quickly became obvious that Grenfell might not be an isolated case, but many other multi-occupancy buildings across the UK containing not just ACM cladding, but other materials that could pose an inherent fire safety risk. For example, lack of cavity wall breaks, timber balconies, polystyrene insulation. The risk with these types of exposures, insurance became very difficult to obtain, or it would come at a cost, one significantly higher than that previously enjoyed. Initially, it was expected that owners of these buildings would have to foot the bill to make these buildings safe. But invariably, these owners were leaseholders who were normal consumers with mortgages for their flats, and many could not afford the remediation costs, let alone the spiralling cost to insure these buildings. This led to the formation of Cladiator groups who lobbied members of Parliament to take action and look into the injustice of having to pay for remediation works and the perceived unfair nature of the insurance costs the buildings that not so long ago were deemed to be safe and paying normalised premiums. The Right Honourable Secretary for State, Michael Gove, took up the challenge, and ultimately government established the Building Safety Fund. The fund was initially designed for the remediation of buildings with cladding up to 18 metres, but this was expanded under intense lobbying to 11 metres or four stories and included other identified fire safety issues. Mr. Gove also stated that he would hold building developers to account and would ask the Financial Conduct Authority to invest in insurance costs, to investigate the insurance costs in this sector. As at the 1st of November 2023, 52 developers have signed a pledge committing to remediate life-critical fire safety works in buildings over 11 metres that they have played a role in developing or refurbishing over the last 30 years in England. Developers making this commitment have also agreed to reimburse any funding received from government remediation programmes in relation to buildings they had a role in developing or refurbishing. So let's look at the FCA's thematic reviews. The FCA issued reports both in September 22 and April 2023, which found significant issues in the multi-occupancy building insurance market, which are leading to poor outcomes for leaseholders. They published a consultation paper setting out their proposed remedies to address issues with transparency, product design, and remuneration practices. In April 2023, the FCA published a consultation paper and proposed a number of rule changes. These changes were intended to address the harms identified in the multi-occupancy building insurance market. Leaseholders are legally bound to pay insurance charges. They have no influence whatsoever over policy selection or price, and are not customers of the insurer or the broker. Where leaseholders are not customers, there is no express requirement to consider their interests. The lack of transparency makes it harder for leaseholders to challenge whether costs have been reasonably incurred and allows firms to hide poor practices. Some remuneration practices within the market seem excessive and do not deliver fair value. The distribution of insurance often involves multiple parties to take a remuneration that is included in the premium being paid. The FCA's work identified commissions of up to 62% being paid to brokers in some cases. Most firms could not explain why current remuneration practices were justified. Of particular concern was the practice of commission being shared onwards with freeholders and their property managing agents. These issues have caused considerable distress for many leaseholders, including affecting their mental health and well-being. In the FCA's consultation, they proposed introducing new disclosure requirements aimed at providing key information to leaseholders, including leaseholders and others in a similar position as customers within the scope of some of the FCA's rules. And the FCA's final new rules. The FCA wants to ensure better outcomes for leaseholders in the multi-occupancy building insurance market and other policy stakeholders in a similar position to leaseholders. Their rules will do this by increasing transparency for leaseholders. This will make it easier for them to identify and challenge poor practices and incentivising firms to deliver better outcomes. Requiring firms to ensure their products are consistent with the needs and interests of leaseholders and other policy stakeholders, are priced in a way that provides fair value and that remuneration practices do not lead to poor outcomes. The FCA are clarifying the leaseholder definition to set out more clearly that it covers residential leaseholders. This means that the disclosure rules only apply to buildings insurance policies for residential leaseholders where they are liable to pay a service charge. Firms will not need to provide disclosures intended for commercial leaseholders. They are also including an additional part to the definition of policy stakeholder, so that it only captures natural persons who are acting outside of their trade or profession. This is to clarify that commercial entities, including commercial leaseholders, will not be considered policy stakeholders. They are introducing guidance to make clear that the required remuneration disclosure for leaseholders must include all forms of remuneration or financial incentive, including contingent remuneration, which is payments that depend on the policy being taken out, and other remuneration earned post-contract. The FCA are making a provision in the disclosure rule to allow firms to estimate premium breakdown at a building or dwelling level if they are unable to identify an exact figure. The rules come into effect from the 31st of December 2023. ICOB's Prod 4 and CISC remuneration rules now include specific consideration of a new category of policy stakeholder, which in respect of multi-occupancy buildings insurance is leaseholders. Whilst a broker's customer may be the building's freeholder or managing agent, they now must also consider the interests of leaseholders and act in their best interest. There is a new disclosure requirement for stakeholders. Insurers and brokers will each be required to provide information for stakeholders about the insurance policy, number of markets approached, potential conflicts, and remuneration in cash terms of everyone in the distribution chain, including any profit shares or contingent income. This comes in the form of a stakeholder pack, including a summary of cover from the insurer and a stakeholder certificate from the broker. Brokers are required to ask their customers to share the pack with stakeholders as soon as practicable. Product manufacturers, predominantly insurers, but also including MGAs and brokers with delegated authority and co-manufacturing responsibilities, must now consider leaseholders as a relevant part of the target market when designing, pricing, and distributing their products. They must also demonstrate that products provide fair value to leaseholders as well as any other customers. This means there must be a fair relationship between the total price and the overall benefits leaseholders receive. I'll give you some examples. So Beaver brokers will be able to assess their fair value through the Auxera Fair Value Assessment Framework, and it's available at the link that you can see on the screen. This is really useful, not only for evidencing fair value within the multi-occupancy buildings insurance market, but also any other product that they're working with. Once a broker is confident that they can demonstrate fair value in the distribution chain, draw up agreements with third parties. This is an example of a commission sharing agreement with a property managing agent detailing the regulatory work that carried out by them in return for any commission payment received. And we'll share examples with these and send all the slides to everybody that's on the call. Brokers should develop a stakeholder certificate and issue with the insurer a summary of cover. This is an appropriate example which details the information the FCA rules demand is disclosed to leaseholders. Brokers are required to instruct property managing agents and or freeholders to pass on to leaseholders as soon as practicable to do so. And you will see it contains all the necessary information that a stakeholder would require: who the insurer is, who the broker is, the managing agent, date of issue, the policy number, policy wording and the version reference, the name of the insurer, the premises address, declared value, the period of insurance, a breakdown of the premiums in full. If there's any conflicts of interest, they have to be declared on the certificate, and that usually includes something along the lines of captive insurance arrangements and MGAs, whereby the freeholder or the managing agent, the broker that's placing the insurance, and the ultimate insurer of the building are one and the same owner, and it has to be declared at that point. The earnings disclosure is a particularly important part that's really important for leaseholders. You can see here that it breaks down the earnings disclosure of everybody in the distribution chain, including the commission income that the brokerage receives, and then the amount the managing agent or the freehold receives if they pass any on, for what work that freeholder is doing to justify that level of income for them. It then also covers the market selection, who was approached and why, and the basis for recommending that policy. Thank you very much. I'm happy to take some questions.
Thank you, John. That was a really good summary there of the details of the situation, which I think does generate quite a lot of questions for people. I've already had one question in, which we'll get started with then, but if anybody, feel free to put your hand up or unmute and jump in at an appropriate point when the last question finishes. Or if you would like me to put your questions to John on your behalf, I had written a message in the question, but in the message box, where you can write it and I will read it out on your behalf. I know that some people might be in an office with noisy backgrounds. So the first question that we had in was from Adrian from Create Solutions. And Adrian says, having had first-hand experience of interacting with the FCA on this, what would you say to others to help them comply with FCA expectations?
It's a great question, Adrian.
John, apologies also. Thanks, Sandra. You might not want to go into too much detail, obviously, from a confidentiality point of view, but I thought it might be worth, if you could, sharing kind of experience with people.
Yeah, our evidence is that if you've got a rationale and a really good reason for the commission levels that you are earning, and then B, the reason for sharing that, if that rationale is documented in a fair and rational way, then we've found that the FCA are quite reasonable, if I'm honest. I think it's important to understand the regulatory work that any property managing agent or freeholder does to justify those earnings, put it into a contract, recognise the work that they do, because if they didn't do that work, there'd be an awful lot more work on the broker's shoulders. And then the stakeholder certificate then should disclose the regulatory work that the property managing agent is doing on behalf of the broker to justify those earnings. And then the leaseholders will have a fair, clear and transparent understanding of the work of everybody in the distribution chain, not only the insurance broker, but the property managing agent as well. And they've got then, you know, a fair way of challenging those costs. Is that fair enough?
Yeah, thanks, John. Much appreciated. I think what's interesting is your comments around reasonableness. Having worked with a regulator previously, it's good to hear that. And if you're sensible in your approach and you're reasonable with them, generally you'll get the back in return.
We'll agree. And I think we could all agree that 62% commission isn't reasonable.
Brilliant. Thanks, John. Thanks, Sandra.
Okay. Lovely. Okay. Next question in from Alex. Would the disclosure rules apply to ancillary products, for example, terrorism insurance, where the target market are not primarily residential leaseholders, but they may be indirectly impacted where a percentage of the premium the building owner pays towards terrorism insurance may lead to an increase in the leaseholder's premium for the building insurance they pay?
I would say so, Sandra. You'll see the stakeholder certificate that I showed as an example did disclose the terrorism premium and any earnings as a result of that on the back of it. So we've included it. I think a lot of leases and the way leases are written tends to make the freeholder or the managing agent responsible for including terrorism within the lease, within the insurance as part of the lease. So yes, I would say it has to be disclosed. Particularly if the leaseholders are contributing towards the cost of the premium.
Thank you, John. That's useful to know what you guys are doing it on it as well. Okay, so we've done that one. Question from John. No mention of mixed-use properties. Will the new rules solely apply to the residential area? Can brokers consider refunding remuneration to freeholders, etc., for the commercial area? And where is this referenced? Quite a big question there, John.
Yeah, so mixed-use buildings are included, but the disclosure requirements are only required for the residential leasehold element of the building. So there's no requirement on you to disclose anything to the commercial leaseholders that occupy any aspect of that building.
Okay, John, does that answer your question for you there? You happy with that? Yeah, no comments.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, there
Yeah,
you
we
are,
can.
John. You're
Okay,
happy
yeah.
with that?
Okay, so, and what about the commission element? So, if you've got a multi-property portfolio, which a lot of my work in the past has been across hundreds plus properties, various properties will be commercial. So, they will have a single premium for that commercial property. No
Yeah.
problem. As far as I can see, the rules are not stopping some form of remuneration rebate to maybe
Correct.
the owner or the agent, etc. As long as it's fair value, that's given. But what if a single property is shops on the bottom, retail above? Will that be allowed? And is the insurer going to split?
So, John, I've got to tell you, there's no rule coming into effect that prevents the sharing of commission with a property managing agent for either residential or commercial premises at this stage. Now, the Department of Levelling Up Housing and Communities have proposed legislation within the Leaseholder Reforms Bill that will prevent commission on residential properties, multi-occupancy buildings being shared with freeholders or property managing agents, but that's some way down the line. So now, if you are going to share commission with a property managing agent or a freeholder, either for a residential building, predominantly for a residential building, or a commercial, then you have to be confident that you can do so, and it's fair to leaseholders to do so. Now, what we've done and what we've come up with the FCA is that we devise a commission sharing agreement that details the regulatory work that a property owner, a freeholder, or a managing agent is doing on behalf of its leaseholders to justify any share in its income. And the stakeholder certificate that we're issuing also details that work. So it's fair and transparent to everybody in the distribution chain that you understand who's earning what and for what work.
Okay, and that's not required on the commercial element.
Not required on the commercial element,
And
but is on the residential.
what sort of work would a property owner be doing, which would be considered to be part of fair value for them to receive remuneration?
So on the slides that I showed earlier, there was an example there of a commission sharing agreement and a stakeholder certificate, and that both documents detail the work that I would regard as an example of regulatory work that is sufficient to warrant any sharing of commission. And we're happy to share those. I'm happy to share that on the slides after the call.
Yeah, I'll look forward to receiving those. Thank you very much, John.
No
Cheers.
problem.
Thanks, John. Really useful for us to understand how you're applying it. as a business as well, and not just hearing from you, you know, the core rules, because this is what is most useful to people, how it's practically going to be put in place by
companies. We have disclosed our commission sharing agreements and stakeholder certificate to both the FCA and the ELUC, and both parties have been very happy.
Yeah, good stuff. Okay.
And John, is it worth saying, sorry, Sandra, is it worth John saying about the piece that you entered into with the government that was published a couple of weeks ago?
So, yeah, I've generally been trying to keep, you know, a lot of the documents that I'm sharing they've not got Bridge on them. So I've just used them as examples with the permission of Bridge, taking Bridge out, and I've got ABC Insurance in there. But Bridge Insurance Brokers, for whom I'm the technical director, have just agreed with the ELUC a few weeks ago, a pledge that in respect of buildings with identified fire safety issues, that we won't share any commission with third parties, nor will we take any more than 15% commission on those buildings. And we will disclose completely all the earnings of everyone in the distribution chain, and those stakeholder certificates are already going out to those types of buildings and leaseholders who are affected in those buildings. Now, there's only 5 brokers in the UK that have agreed to do that. We wanted it to go a little bit further, but it is where it is. And we were already doing this piece of work anyway. So for us to agree to the pledge that the ELUC wanted us to agree to actually meant we were doing nothing different than what we were already doing anyway. So it was normal.
Okay, lovely. Next question is from Zoe. How does the FCA expect leaseholders to assess whether how does the FCA expect leaseholders to assess whether a commission, etc., is reasonable, considering that a standard leaseholder won't have any frame of reference?
I'm not sure I agree that they haven't got any frame of reference, because there are leasehold tribunals which uphold the reasonableness of earnings, particularly from insurance products that are placed, and there's already precedent that have been set within leaseholder tribunals that normally 15 to 20% is a reasonable amount. The issue in our market has come from those that exceed those sort of levels and are, you know, and were just completely unfair towards leaseholders. So I would hope that the idea behind being transparent is that everybody knows everybody's earnings, nothing's hidden. They are, at the end of the day, beneficiaries of the policy. So they should have some understanding of certainly who the insurance is with, a summary of the cover, the sums insured, who the managing agent is that's representing them, and any earnings of anybody in the distribution chain. They also should have an understanding of the markets that have been approached, any conflicts of interest, and the reason for recommendation of that policy. And I think the stakeholder certificate, together with the insurer's summary of cover, should do that.
Okay, excellent. Thank you, John. Zoe, hopefully that answers your questions. I can see a couple of people have come off mute. I did say that next, though, we would go to Mike Wilson from Flaxman's, who would like to raise a couple of questions to you direct, please, John. Mike, are you there? There you
yes,
are.
Yes, I'm here. Hope you can hear me. Hello, John. Thanks for that very helpful summary, and for all the work that you've put in behind the scenes. I'm sure we're all very grateful. I'm just wondering if there are any applications concerning claims from the leaseholder's point of view. Is it expected that the leaseholder will have a greater say when it comes to claims? Because I've come across some cases where, for instance, there's been a water damage claim in a domestic flat, and it might be that the freeholder or the management company don't have the appetite to actually put a claim in at all, because either they can't be bothered or because they want to keep the claims record clear, and yet the leaseholder is incensed because they feel that their claim should be dealt with under the block policy. So do you see that these new arrangements give the leaseholder better rights of direct access to the insurer?
It should do. And it should give them increased rights to raise queries directly with the insurer. If I'm honest, we as a broker at Bridge, we've already been taking claims instructions directly from leaseholders and flat owners themselves. I don't see any reason why not. And we've also put in our commission sharing agreement, we have actually stipulated that if we're approached directly by a leaseholder, that we will respond to their query directly.
That's good. And related to that, in the event of a claim being declined, but the freehold or the management company, again, don't have the appetite to contest it, does the freeholder have the right to issue a complaint and, if necessary, go to the Ombudsman?
No, they don't. Unfortunately, the policy stakeholder definition isn't the same as a customer, so they do not have the rights of complaint under the Financial Ombudsman Service, I'm afraid.
Yeah, well, at least it's good to know what the rules are.
Yeah.
Can I just raise something else on claims, if you've got a moment? Just from your experience, it probably doesn't relate to this too directly, but I've also come across cases where there's a policy excess, say it's £1,000, or not, and you've got a leaseholder with a water damage claim. I've not come across any agreement as to whether or not that excess should be borne by the individual leaseholder, or whether it should be shared across the whole group. Do you have any experience on this?
No, it's a really good question. I've not come across anything in the rules that states whether it should be down to the individual leaseholder or shared across the group. I think we've seen examples of both, whereby on the service charge of the following year, any excesses that have been incurred by the block have been shared out as part of the service charge. And I've also seen it where it's been levied against the individual flat owner responsible for the escape of water leak. I don't think I've seen anything that changes or stipulates that responsibility going forward either.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for that.
No problem.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Mike. Okay, there are two people I can see have unmuted themselves, so I'll just check if it's to ask a question. R. Schofield, I believe you were first. Do you have a question for John? Are you unmuted if you do? We can't hear you. Looks like you're unmuted, but okay, maybe no question from R. Schofield. Julie Price, did you have a question for John?
Yes, I'm hoping you can hear me.
Yes,
we can.
Yeah, Julie. Good. Yeah. John, you mentioned responding to leaseholders direct. Now, I have had people in the past come on, and I've always gone back to the managing agent because I don't want to tread on their toes. They obviously are paid for a service here. We just do the insurance and do the best we can. And obviously, I would not really advocate doing that. I really wouldn't, because, you know, some of these buildings have got like hundreds in them that are 40 plus. And, you know, it really is. And there's always one or two, shall we say, you must have had this in the past where, you know, there's things that you get, you know, you realise that the managing agent's got his, you know, his work cut out, shall we say. And there's I appreciate we've got to do these certificates and that. I'm just bothered about giving people a lot of information, which they're obviously entitled to, but the sums insured have been climbing tremendously. So it looks like we're charging an awful lot for the same building, but the sums insured have just got, you know, they've gone up to, 10%, 20%, whatever. So we've got a work cut out here, but I really, really wouldn't respond to a leaseholder in the first instance, or possibly the second, although I notice Aviva said if they get a response direct, they'll respond on the second. I don't know if you've seen it. Yes. So I'm just a bit bothered about that.
There is an expectation in the FCA's new rules that we do respond. So you need to make yourself aware of that and try and build that into your
The managing agent will also obviously, as that job too.
Correct.
I mean, that's he's charging for it. So, you know, I'm just, we're not part, they're not part of the direct, they're not the client, if you like. The client's the whole block, as you know.
Yeah.
I'm just a bit bothered about certain individuals, shall we say, coming on to you, asking you things, and you're thinking, oh dear, what's, you know, and then the money, you know, it surely our main job is just to get the insurance as best we can for everybody. But you're not going to make everybody happy.
No, unfortunately you're not. And that's always going to be the case. But before you respond, there's nothing stopping you having a conversation with the managing agent and saying, you know, we've got a duty to come back to the leaseholder in this regard. Unless you have any objection specifically, then this is how we're going to respond. And there's nothing wrong with doing that within the framework of the new rules.
Okay. Julie, I don't know whether you've accidentally gone on mute there or you were happy there with John's wrap up. Let us know. Are you there?
Yes, I am there. I think we'll all learn in the next year what's going to happen, to be honest.
Absolutely.
Trial and error, because as I say, there's just, you know, I would really want to stay close to the managing agent where there is issues rather than me trying to jump in.
Julie, I can understand that, but you really have to protect yourself as well. And you know, when in that commission sharing agreement, which is a contractual relationship between you and the managing agent, should you choose to introduce one of those, you could make it clear that if you choose to, you can go back to the leaseholders directly.
Okay.
And that protects you a little bit.
Okay, one point there. Just clarify for me then. I don't share commission with a managing agent. Never have. Okay. I've done the best I can. It's always been that way. But I take it I still have to do this stakeholder certificate. There is no share. There's no share. To me, that's their job. They do the sums insured. They're chartered. And, you know, for me,
you still have a responsibility to put together the policy information that's to be shared with the stakeholders.
John, is it worth trying to explain a little more about why that might be the case? Because I'm kind of hearing Julie coming back with one thing, you saying one thing, and it's landing for me in terms of why. I totally share John's view on this. You've got to cover your back. But it would be why, yeah. I guess, John.
Well, the FCA have set a requirement that we have to share that policy information with the leaseholders. It's not a decision that you can choose to take. It's one that we're being told to take as part of the new rules that the FCA introduced.
Okay. Thank you very much, Julie, for those questions, and Adrian. Right, next question is from John Fiorentini from NFU Mutual. John says, is there any suggestion that the FCA will look to extend this to the domestic residential tenancy market?
No. I can tell you that for certain. They've already said that individuals that are in houses of multiple occupancy or a short hold tenancies are unlikely to be affected by this, because invariably they're not subject to a service charge, and they're never asked to contribute towards the payment of the insurance premium. So the thought process is that they will not be included.
Okay, that's a good answer there, very to the point. I think there was another question, but it's disappeared for me. So if you did have another question, you just check that you've still left it as sent and not deleted it. I can't see anything else in the chat now. Would anybody else like to unmute and ask John directly a question or make any comments on the information shared today? I think it's been a really good summary and a great opportunity for us to all get together and have a discussion on this. So really grateful, John. Thank you.
No problem.
For sharing.
Shall I send the slides to you, Sandra, and you can share it with everybody else?
Yes, please. Yeah. That would be great. Thank you.
Okay, dokie.
And we can get them out there. Just let me check. John Lanning, yes, can see you've unmuted. Would you like to ask another question?
I have, and I would appreciate the slides, even though I'm not, you might tell, from the Manchester area. So thank you for having me on board. This has been really, really helpful.
No problem. One
slight point on lady that was on previously, and John there was referring to providing the information required on policy information, etc. So that is going to the customer, though, isn't it, the freeholder? And it's up to them to pass on according to the instrument?
Correct. Our responsibility is to ask the freeholder, the managing agent or the property owner to pass on to the leaseholders as soon as practicable after the conclusion of the contract. So,
yeah, I think that's important for the
absolutely
the brokers to know that they have their one point of contact to provide this information to. They don't have to respond to every single leaseholder. And in fact, I believe that if a leaseholder is asking for information, we can point them towards the insurer in the first instance.
I would say so, but we are, we've taken the decision here at Bruce that we will try and assist any leaseholders that come to us directly.
Yeah, I'm not trying to not assist and be helpful to people, but when you're dealing with thousands upon thousands of individuals, when you're used to dealing with one point of contact,
it's
worth it. I don't mean that not to be fair to the stakeholders here. I mean it purely in a commercial sense. You know, I think that's you do what you can within the rules, but you're also looking at the commercial side of the businesses.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you, John.
Thank you, John, for that question. And Mike from Flaxman's, another question from you, please.
Yes, it just occurs to me that although the leaseholders now have a much better position to understand the insurances, they still aren't involved in the actual placing of the insurance, and they're not involved in the process of making a fair presentation of the risk. I'm just wondering if there's been any further discussion about a rather unusual answer to a problem, and that is that some solicitors recommend that a leaseholder take out contingent buildings insurance if the solicitor has any concerns about the insurance arrangements. The problem with that is you don't know whether there are going to be any concerns about the insurance until it's too late. So, for instance, if I invest a lot of money in purchasing a lease of a flat, and I want to protect that just as I would do if I was insuring a house, I'm putting a lot of faith in the freeholder, and I'm not aware that it's general practice for leaseholders to take out contingent insurance, but they could easily find that the freeholder, they might have made a non-disclosure of something very significant when they're taking out the insurance. And so at the very point that they need the insurance, the policy has been voided. And I'm not aware of any general tendency for contingent insurance to be recommended, but I just wondered if there's been any discussion about this in the course of the events that you've just been explaining.
There's been none.
No.
No. And you know, bear in mind that it's either the freeholder or in the when property managers and agents are involved, they normally deal with a residential management committee as well. So there is the opportunity for some leaseholders to act as a director within the residential management committee if it's something that really is of concern. And then they have the opportunity to be part of the process that gives the property manager and agent the right information and receives the quotations back, so they have a better understanding of how that insurance product is being recommended to them. And those RMCs operate on behalf of all the leaseholders that are within those buildings.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. And John, another question for you in the message box from Sheelan Islam. On the stakeholder certificate side of things, I note earlier there was mention of disclosing any form of remuneration received from the insurer.
Correct.
So a broker has a contingent arrangement.
Has to be disclosed.
Where such earning, if triggered, depends on the overall account with the said insurer. How would it be practicable to disclose this on the certificate? And the reason for asking is, as you will be aware, I'm sure, Most often, these agreements with insurers are an annual agreement and not dependent on a specific renewal date of a particular policy.
Correct. And whilst I understand that, the premium of that building may well contribute to the level of earnings that you trigger or achieve at the end of the year. So the policy statement allows you to make an estimate of those earnings, and they are to be disclosed, whether contingent or non-contingent. They have to be disclosed in some form.
Okay, Shilam, hopefully that answers your question for you. Yes, they said thank you, John, lovely stuff. Okay, next question has come through from Rachel. During the claims process, who do we deal with? Our PM contact or the leaseholder or both? Does the leaseholder have a say regarding settlement?
We deal with both. We've dealt with claims where it's just the leaseholder only, and we've kept the property managing agent informed, and we've dealt with claims where it's just the PM and they've kept the leaseholder informed, and we've dealt with claims that involve all parties and everybody has had a say in the settlement.
Okay, that's clear. Thank you, John. Hopefully that was clear for you, Rachel. No more questions in the written messages part. Would anybody like to unmute and ask John anything directly? There's still time left for any of the questions that you may have. I can't see anybody typing, can't see. Mitchell, have you unmuted? Oh no, you've just joined us, Mitchell. If you do have anything, feel free to ask questions now. We're just in the question part. So you can write it in the group chat or unmute and ask John Batty directly. Okay, nothing else has come through. So, John, you've offered to share the slides and the information you've been through, which is really generous of you. Thank you so much. So we will get that out to everybody afterwards.
No problem.
Thank you so much for giving us that great summary and then letting us give you a really good grill in to dive into your knowledge and see how you're applying this at Bridge.
That's
I hope
fine.
It's been really useful for everybody. If I can ask you to keep an eye out for all other upcoming events to see if they're suitable for you and your teams. There is one coming up on Wednesday on creating real change through making small decisions. That's by our Mindful Committee. And there is another one on Friday, again by our Mindful Committee, on how to approach the festive season with an open heart. So please do go to cii.co.uk/Manchester, and you can see those listed under events and sign up for them there to receive the logins. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. Thank you to John and everybody who posed questions and took part in the discussion. Have a lovely lunchtime and afternoon.
You're welcome.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.